Joe Gordon that MacArthur used to joke about once in a while in the clubhouse. He said, never go flying with Joe Gordon. And then he began to tell the story about when we were in St. Petersburg in this season of 1945, and Joe asked me, did I like to go out in an airplane? I said, I like flying a little bit. So he says, well, tomorrow morning real early, we'll take a flight out over Tampa Bay. Well, I didn't know what Joe meant. I thought he was kidding. So the next morning at daybreak, he gets me up out of the hotel and takes me to the airport, and he had leased a plane, which he is a licensed pilot. And he says, come on, let's go on up. I said, okay, I'm game. So I says, no stunt and stuff now. I says, fly straight and level. If you want to make a little bank left or right, that's all right with me. But he says, well, I says, I'll do that. So I said, okay. So in we go, get up in the plane, take off. We get out over top of Tampa Bay, up about 5,000 feet. All of a sudden, he just turns our bottom upwards. And everything, he just looped the loop, sideways, any kind of way he could fly. So I got sick. So when I came back down and landed, we had to go to the ball field to work out. And I guess I was still white as a ghost anyway from it. But I did manage to get down some orange juice and stuff before I went to the ballpark. And when we got to the ballpark, and Joe MacArthur took one look at me, and he says, uh-huh, you're another sucker. Been flying with Joe Gordon. So that was it.
Do you remember where the Yankees trained that spring of 1945?
St. Petersburg.
I see. In other words, you did go south in 45.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, that was a remarkable thing, you know, being a youngster and getting into major leagues. Of course, I'd played ball previous to that in the Yankee chain, but it's not like getting up with the big boys. DiMaggio and Keller and Dickey and fellas like that, and especially Joe MacArthur, who was the manager. It was quite a feeling and quite an honor to be on that ball club at that time, because they had a high-class ball club up there then.
I'm sure they did. Do you have any interesting stories about spring training?
Well, not too much, only I thought we were working too hard, not being used to working the way they did and the way they trained. It was different from what I had been through before, because all my other training wasn't the routine like it was. Mm-hmm. The one thing I did like about it, though, was that hot sunshine we had up there. I love that sunshine in Florida. Mm-hmm. And as far as any stories or anything that happened at the time, the only thing I did remember I got a big bang out of it, was with Phil Rizzuto. The boys kept teasing Phil about his long underwear. He said, never mind. He says, it's cool here, and he says, they're good to train with, and so forth and so on. So he used to train in them in the spring, see. Mm-hmm. So we get to the clubhouse one morning, Atlee Donnell and Bill Dickey and DiMaggio and Kellen, all of us were sitting around, Tommy Henrick. And I looked across at Phil's locker, and they had him nailed up across his locker with knots in each arm and each leg, and had him nailed across, and across the front it had something about they might be long now, but when the spring is over, they'll be cut short. That was right. I remember that very much, and that was about the only thing that I know. They kept pretty strict on us down there, and we had to be in at certain time and eat at certain time, and then of course, then our training was anywhere from 2 to 3 hours a day.
I see.
The rest of it, you could do what you please.
Do you have any interesting wartime stories, either when you were pitching for Norfolk or that 45 season with the Yankees, about food rationing or travel restrictions?
Well, as far as the food rationing is concerned, it seemed like that the ball players was eating pretty good, high on the hog, as they call it in those days. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that I can remember then was gas rationing, mm-hmm. that I didn't get enough gas on time. A lot of times you had to go places, you had to do a little hoofing it instead of riding in a car.
I see.
But I don't remember anything other than that about the rationing part of it. Travel restrictions, I remember we used to travel by train. And this is another story that maybe you might be interested in, was that I had been on Pullmans before, which some of the boys didn't know. And being a youngster, I asked one of them one time, and you know, they had this weave net, looked like a hammock, hanging by the windows. And the boy said, I know what they're for. I said, what do you think they're for? I said, I think they're made for to put shoes in. He says, no, you put your shoes under the edge of the bunk so that your porter can shine them every night. He says, that's to put your arm in overnight, rest your arm. I says, yeah, that's what they said about Babe Ruth, and he had a sore arm for about 4 weeks from. But I says, I've got y'all fooled. It was made for shoes is what it was made for. Put your shoes up there. And that's what the boys told me, is to put your arm in.
Do you remember the exact circumstances, where you were, and what it was like when the Yankees called you up? I mean, was it a phone call, a letter saying, look, you've been invited to spring training with us? Or what
occurred? In 1944, I was here in Norfolk during the war. And Johnny Noon at one time came through and told me that if I kept plugging and kept going instead of quitting during the war years, that I would be better off to keep playing here in Norfolk. And he says, possibility if you have a good year that you will be up to the Yankees in 45 or 46. Of course, at that time, no one knew how long the war was going to last to start with. So sure enough, I stuck it out here, worked on my wife's father's farm during the day and pitched baseball at night. And
yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I was wondering if you were a full-time ball player or whether it was more or less moonlighting for you. I mean,
well, it was more or less moonlighting because the draft board at the time wouldn't let me go full-time baseball.
I see.
Until I was called in 1945, they did turn me loose at the Bureau of what they call them,
draft board,
the Bureau of Draft Board, turned me loose and let me go to the Yankees to play. And when they did that, they gave me a 4F card, which entitled me to stay out of the service.
Sure.
And in the meantime, I had to go to Camp Lee, though. I went to Camp Lee for 10 days and was in the hospital. I have acute arthritis in my spine.
I see.
And the year 1945 and 46, when I was with the Yankees, I played with a brace on around
really?
My back.
I see.
It kept my support across my back. And that was one reason the service turned me out, just because of that.
Yes, I was going to ask you if it was because of some injury or because you were engaged in farming, which
yeah.
may be considered a...
Well, that was done by a saddle horse. I was breaking saddle horses, and he run into the fence and threw me across the fence.
Oh, I see. Did that
was,
happen when you were young?
I was when I was about 16, 17 years old.
I see.
But other than that, that's about the story on that part of it.
Well, the draft board froze him on the farm, and
yeah,
he couldn't go in because of
my spine.
Physical defect. He was frozen on the job at the time.
Oh, really? I see.
And we were living in the winter with Mom and Daddy on the farm, and so...
Was this here in the Norfolk area?
Mm-hmm, right here.
It
was Prince's Anne County then.
I see.
It's not what Virginia Beach.
I see. So I take it then that they just sent you a telegram or a letter saying, look, you're invited to spring training with us?
Well, they just sent me a contract.
Oh, Oh, fine.
To sign a contract, you know, like they do every year. They send their men contracts to...
Well, that's when Larry MacPhail called the draft board and told
Well, he called the draft board, yeah, and told them about that. And then, of course, they sent me a contract, and then in turn I signed it and was shipped down to St. Pete.
I see.
Yes, that was quite a thing. And if I had it all to do over again, I'd do the same thing.
Would you?
I really would.
Do you mind if I ask you what your salary was that first year? Because I know salaries.
Lord, when I signed, let's see, 1945. I don't even remember. It wasn't like they get today. You can bet you.
Not 6,000. Certainly under 10.
It was about that. Oh yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't like it is today. You go in, look at a man in the eye, and he gives you $100,000. And those days, you were lucky to get the fountain pen that you signed with.
Do you have any special recollections about any of the players in that 45 Yankee club?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It was a whale of a ball club. Didn't seem like anything bothered them too much, and they were winning pennants way before I went up there. Mm-hmm. Of course, the one year I went there, they didn't win. Let's see, what was it? 45, they came in, what was it? What did we come in? Fourth in 1945? And in 1946,
the Red Sox and the Indians.
That's right. That ended that part of it. But I was in the world. I was in. I only got the benefit out of one World Series.
Red Sox and Indians were 47.
47. They were 47.
Oh, okay.
But anyhow, as far as this goes, I missed three World Series up there, and I only had the benefit out of one, mm-hmm. which I was with the Giants at one time.
In 1951, that famous club.
That's right.
Yes.
I was home, my wife and I was home watching it on TV, and then we both said it about the same time. Becky thought it, and I thought it, that I just watched Bobby Thompson hit one out of here, and we'll have a little cash in our pocket, and sure enough, that's what did it. He hit that home run, you remember, and won that.
That's right.
Won the World Series.
Right.
But I was home. I don't know what we were doing, but we were watching TV anyway.
It was Dusty Sunlight after gotten to Rhodes or something.
Dusty Rhodes?
Well, that's late. That's 3 years later.
That's later.
Oh, I thought.
Yeah.
But you say that Hank Aroy was a kind of reserved individual, and he had arm trouble off and on?
Well, Hank was that type of a fella, as far as I knew. He was a hard thrower, and he had good stuff, but sometimes he had a tendency of being wild, mm-hmm. especially with his fastball, and that was his best pitch as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason Hank was shipped off, it must have been a feeling somewhere between ownership, club ownership, and Hank himself. As far as the pitching that he did with us when I was there, it seemed to be pretty good to me, even though he did, to my knowledge, he had a little elbow trouble at one time. Now, maybe they figured that it wouldn't hold, or they, you know, he'd be in trouble and wouldn't be able to help the club. Mm-hmm. So that could be one reason. And then if there's any other reason, it never was brought to my attention, or no one ever said anything about it where I heard about it. So
you don't know if there was any deal whereby the rest of the clubs in the American League would pass on him so the Cubs could get him.
Well, that's the... You know, as long as I've been in baseball, I never have been to one of those meetings to where they have all that, and where they... buy ball players and sell ball players and trade you like a bunch of cattle, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was often wondering myself why they trade different ball players and ship them around like they do. When a ball player gets to one place and he gets used to that place, gets used to the team and used to playing with each other, then they up and think that they have someone else better, and they make a switch and it does them harm instead of good.
Oh, that's something. What about Nick Denton? What kind of guy was Nick?
Well, I like Nick. He was he was sort of a sincere fella. He was very sincere in his baseball. He didn't like nobody to mess with his bats, and he didn't like nobody to fool around with his uniform, only the clubhouse boy himself. And he kept each bat and kept everything all like he wanted. Didn't want anybody messing with it. He was very particular about that.
Oh, really?
Which a lot of people in baseball are that way anyhow, about their pet bats, you know. They seem to hit more with one bat than they can another. Mm-hmm. Maybe it feels better to them. Maybe it's balanced better. But old Nick, I remember him very distinctly in the old clubhouse there in Yankee Stadium. Somebody was playing a trick on him. They come in there and put a broken bat in there and put tape around it. Mm-hmm. And he thought it was one. It was actually one of his old bats.
Which had been broken.
But it had been broke, see. So they taped it all up and put it back in there and took his good bat out, see. And he thought somebody would come in and rub tape around it.
Yeah.
And he was ready to clean out the clubhouse, I'll tell you. But he was a great guy to play with. All of them